Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you on this Labor Day weekend. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Welcome to the show. We are live in the studio today, and let me get you that phone number so you can call in with your questions. We want to make sure that you get your calls in and your questions in right away so we don't run out of time at the end of the show. It seems like that happens so much. Here's the number. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. All right. And doctors, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lynette.
Yes, I see one standing and one sitting, Dr. Yeah. Umat and Dr. Mixon.
We're seesaw.
Yes, you are. Yes.
Well, I just sat for 2 hours straight. And
yes, you did.
Stretch my legs a bit.
There you go. Very good. So, okay. So, Dr. Mixon, usually try to give us a little update about what's happening in the world of medicine. What are some of the new things you're seeing?
Well, some of the news, of course, is our beloved Dr. Fauci is sick. And so we had a call about him a couple hours ago.
Yeah, it's like, is it true? What's going on?
Yeah, well, he looks like he's just picked up a West Nile virus.
Yeah.
Which he's in that minority of people that get symptoms. Most people infected get no symptoms. About one person in 150 gets serious symptoms and needs hospitalization. Even smaller percentage of people actually get an encephalitis and can die from the virus. It does happen, but it is a very small percentage, less than 0.5% of the infected people. But Fauci is in his 80s, and so his immune system is not as robust as it used to be. He got infected. The good news is human beings are a terminal pathway for this virus. We cannot give it to anyone else. If we are bitten by a mosquito and we then catch the virus, other mosquitoes that bite us can't then carry it to other people. So it's kind of, we're a dead end for the virus. And the real vectors for the virus that help it to spread are birds. And so all those little sparrows and swallows and so on that zip around in the summertime, especially at dusk, they're getting bitten by mosquitoes, and they can spread it from bird to bird, and occasionally a mosquito will bring it to one of us. And so the biggest push right now in New England is trying to decrease their mosquito load. They've got a lot of lakes that have become quite warm now, and so the eggs from the mosquitoes can be hatching and swarming, especially at sundown. And so they're trying to knock down their mosquito load, which will make their people safer. But this is not generally a dangerous virus for most people. So that's kind of a...
And then we talked about senescent cells quite a bit.
Senescent cells are something that I think are the future of, quote, anti-aging in America and in the world. It turns out that at least the animal studies are indicating that the vast majority of the diseases of aging are in fact triggered by the increasing load of senescent cells in our system.
Mm.
Now, that then begs the question, why are senescent cell loads increasing in our system, which is a whole different question. But senescent cells are basically cells, previously healthy cells, that reach the end of their lifespan, and instead of dying and being replaced by a new healthy cell, undergoing a morphologic change in which they enlarge, they get fewer but larger mitochondria, the energy producers in the cell. They actually increase mitochondrial volume, but decrease the healthy cellular energy that's produced by healthy young mitochondria. And they start kicking out anti-growth, anti-healing, anti-repair chemicals into their environment.
Mm.
As we age, our immune systems clear senescent cells more and more slowly. Our immune systems are just not as good at finding and killing them. And we make more of them faster.
Mm.
And part of that is indirectly related to our dropping anabolic hormone loads.
Mm.
Anabolic hormone loads are those hormones that allow us to make lean tissue like muscle, ligament, tendon, heart, lung, kidney, brain, etc. And as those loads decline, we become more sedentary because we have less muscle mass. We fatigue more quickly, so we spend more time sitting.
Right.
That indeed shrinks up our muscles, and it turns out working muscle kills senescent cells.
Right.
And so the less muscle we've got as we age, as our muscles are shrinking and our body fat is increasing, we're getting more and more senescent load. The senescent cells are actually, we now believe, are causing much of our dementia, much of our heart attacks, the atherosclerosis in our blood vessels, the degeneration in our joints, the insulin resistance in our body fat that is triggering diabetes, which in turn triggers a whole host of debilitating and even fatal diseases. So it looks like one of the underlying triggers for all of the diseases of aging is indeed senescent cells.
Right.
And the question is, how do we get rid of them? How do we not form as many? And how do we destroy them when they do? And then how often do we need to go back in and kill them off?
Right. Very good questions.
Yeah. Some of those questions we got answers to.
Yeah.
You know, we do now have some interesting drugs coupled with supplements that can kill senescent cells. We have some hormonal interventions that will give your body the ability to make the muscle that can help kill senescent cells. And we have some rudimentary laboratory testing that might give us at least some hints as to how often we need to retreat your senescent cells.
Hmm.
But at the moment, how often we treat them is more a function of clinical presentation.
Hmm.
When you start to fatigue, when you start to get tired, when you're not healing and recovering as well from your exercise, you probably need another senescent cell therapy.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can do it. It's not expensive. It's not dangerous for most of us.
Right.
Although there are always people who are going to have adverse reactions to anything we do.
For sure.
Yeah. But most people tolerate the senescent cell therapies very well and respond very nicely. So I'm more and more convinced that senescent cell therapy is going to have to become a bigger and bigger part of our therapeutic regimen at Longevity Medical Clinic.
Right. And you were also mentioning that there might be more and more medications that we could use, because currently there's only one drug with supplements, but maybe, you know, if we're targeting different parts of the body, we might know which drug is better for certain things, like for memory or ligaments or heart or lung.
That's right.
And we don't know that right now.
No, we don't. You know, we've got a limited armamentarium.
That's
We've got basically one drug and two supplements that can be used with that drug. But the supplements by themselves don't do the job.
Mm-hmm.
Coupled with the medication. They do a nice job. Mm. So right now it takes a prescription. It takes a doctor that knows what they're doing with this to treat you. And, of course, longevity, we do it all the time.
Right.
So we're probably among the more experienced doctors in the state for doing that. Mm-hmm. I get my senescent cells treated from time to time. Mm-hmm. I suspect most of our older doctors do.
Yeah.
And, it's just a matter.
And many of our patients.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and what does a treatment look like, Dr. Mixon, when somebody comes in for that for the first time?
Well, the standard therapy, the one that we basically borrowed from Mayo Clinic, is a 100 milligram capsule of dasatinib each day for 3 days, along with 1,000 milligrams of quercetin each day for 3 days. And then we give you a four-day break, and then we treat you with 3 days again, a four-day break, and we treat you 3 days a third time and a four-day break. Each time we treat for 3 days, we decrease your senescent load by about 30%.
Wow.
So okay. Let's say we started with 100 cells, and so we treat you for the first 3 days. Well, we've decreased you from 100 to 70.
Okay.
But then the second 3 days, we decrease you by 30% of 70.
Ah.
So now we're down around 49. And then the next day we treat you, or the next time we treat you 3 days from 49, and we get you down to around 30. Okay. So we reduced you by about 70% of your senescent cell load with three-day courses of therapy. And we don't want to reduce them to zero, because there are some evidence that senescent cells actually inhibit the growth of cancers, although that's now being questioned. We're now seeing some data that says that senescent cell loads, we might want to drive them even lower.
All right. Well, let's talk about that.
Okay. And we'll get to some phone calls, too. We're going to take a quick break now, and we will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. I'm Lynette. Here's that phone number to call to get in with your question. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. We're back. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. Good morning. Happy Labor Day weekend. I'm Lynette, here with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, taking your phone calls, and we're going to get to those in just a moment. Here's the number to call with your question today for the doctors, 206-421-5757. All right. We were just finishing up with senescent cells, Dr. Mixon.
Right. Well, we now are coming to the conclusion that the vast majority of the age-related diseases that we normally think of, from dementia to cardiovascular disease to diabetes to degenerative arthritis to, muscle weakness and fatigue, all seem to have as a common pathway an increase in senescent cells in those primary tissues. Mm-hmm. And that it's inhibiting the tissues from healing and repairing and growing as they should, and instead they start degenerating. Mm. So decreasing our senescent cell load may well turn out to be a critical component in healthy aging and long-term aging. Mm. The animal studies, we can increase health span by about 30 to 36%. If you look at that for human beings, let's say that, the average American lifespan is right now for a woman 78 years. She's usually healthy for the first 50 of that 78 years. The last 18 years becomes progressively chronic disease states. Mm. If we could keep her functioning as well as she did in her 40s up through her 70s and 80s, that would be dramatic.
Right.
Okay. Because you give people an extra 25 to 30 years of healthy living.
Yeah.
Without dementia, without degenerative arthritis, without decreasing cardiac function, without all of those diseases that we connect to the normal decline of aging.
Yeah.
That would be a fabulous, fabulous change in America's health.
Yeah, and our social structure and our financial structure would change too.
It would have to because, yeah, if you start working, let's say you go to college, you get your degree by your mid-20s, now you go to work, and then you want to quit at 65, so you've worked for now, what, 40 years?
Mm.
And if you're going to live in another 40 or 50 years, you have to save more than 12% of your income each year.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't put aside, you know, you and your employer each put aside 12.25%. So you put 13% of your income. Well, that means that in, 8 or 9 years, you've saved enough money to live for 1 year. Okay. Mm. Well, that doesn't help you much.
No.
No.
So in 40 years... Yeah. You know, you can now live for 3 years in retirement. and that's the way it is right now.
Yeah.
You know, we do not put enough money aside in Social Security to really live in retirement.
Mm.
And that's why the average person who's depending on their Social Security for their retirement is poor.
Yeah.
Because you've only put aside enough money to live with your previous lifestyle for 3 years.
Mm.
And you're not going to die in 3 years.
Mm.
So if you start collecting Social Security at 65, before you're 70, you're essentially out of money unless you cut your lifestyle way, way, way back.
Mm.
So if we're going to be active, vigorous, alive into our 90 or 100, we're going to have to work a lot longer.
Yeah.
We cannot count on only working 40 years.
Right.
Okay, so... And hence, here I am.
Yeah.
You know, I turned 77 last week.
Yeah.
And
yes.
And I am working full time.
Yeah. But also, you know, you're capable of working because you're healthier.
Because I started with the longevity program when I was 49.
Yeah.
And so, yes, for the last 28 years, I have had the hormone balance of a 25-year-old man.
Yeah.
Which means I am stronger. I am leaner. You know, my brain is functioning well. I have the strength, the energy, the enthusiasm of a younger man. So why would I quit and vegetate on a golf course?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people like being on the golf course,
Jerry. Yes, yeah. And some folks are willing to sit on the front porch in a rocking chair and watch the world go by.
I'm sure they don't think they're vegetating.
I'm not one of them. Yeah. I belong to the, you know, Prevention of Cruelty to Little White Golf Balls Club. And so I see no reason why those poor, innocent little golf balls should get whacked with a driver.
Did you sign the petition?
I think he did, yes.
Yes.
Well, what about the yellow balls and the red balls?
I don't know. I keep all my balls in great shape if I can.
All right.
But that's a whole different
issue. Okay, well, we can continue on this in a moment, but let's get some phone calls. How about that? Here's the number to get through and talk with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757.
I don't know how I fall into it every time. Even with an innocent golf question.
We're going to take a phone call now. We're headed to Des Moines, and we have Kathy on the line. Hi.
Hello,
there, Kathy.
Kathleen.
Save us.
Yes. Hi there. I heard your prior show talking about the urinary tract infection and antibiotics. So if you do take antibiotics, is there something, like, should you eat yogurt afterwards or during that course of medication?
Yes, although I don't think yogurt's going to do a whole lot for you. Yogurt is primarily lactobacillus, you know, which grows mostly in dairy products. And that's not the primary bugs in our gut. So you really need to reestablish the normal bacterial load of your bowel. And You know, I looked at this pretty closely a few months ago. I really put a lot of hours into it because I was saying, you know, most of the supplements out there that are probiotic are pretty inadequate. They simply do not recreate normal bowel flora. And so I had in mind, gee, if I could come up with the right formula, maybe we would make a really great probiotic. But it turns out somebody already does.
Okay.
I found one that that I really, really like, and I think it's as good as anything I could create or better. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, why reinvent the wheel?
Sure.
And so I'm now trying to remember what the name
of
it was. Seed, that was it. It should be, sir, because you're basically seeding bacteria into your gut.
Mm. Okay.
And it has 28 different bacteria that are very commonly found in a healthy bowel. And most of those bacteria do not tolerate oxygen well. So they basically, and they don't tolerate acid well. So what they've done is they put it inside a inner capsule that cuts, that closes out and prevents oxygen coming in. And then they put that capsule inside of another capsule that is acid resistant.
Okay.
So when you swallow it, the first capsule protects it going through your stomach, which is very low pH, and then it dissolves in your bowel and then protects it through your small bowel, and in the colon, the inner capsule finally dissolves and releases those 28 different bacteria into your colon where there is no oxygen, where they will grow quite nicely.
Okay.
And so the best probiotic that I have found anywhere is called Seed. I don't make it. I don't sell it. I have no economic horse in this race. But if I were going to be on antibiotics, that's what I would take.
Mm. Do you remember how many billion colonies it has, Jerry?
I really don't. But, I'm less concerned. The reality is that the generation time for the average bacteria in the bowel is about 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So 30 minutes after you release it, you've doubled it.
Uh-huh.
30 minutes later, you double it again. 30 minutes later, you double it again.
Right.
30 minutes later, you double it again.
Right.
You can go from a few million to tens of billions in a matter of a day.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. But then, isn't it true that people should take some good probiotic on a regular basis as well?
I would say so. But again, which ones?
Yeah.
You know,
fair enough,
and if you've got leaky gut syndrome, for instance, a butyrate supplement is probably your smartest one, and they do sell butyrate as a standalone supplement, and that helps to heal the leaky junctions in your gut very quickly.
Uh-huh.
So I take the butyrate every day along with the Seed, and then you probably need that for several weeks to really rebuild your gut flora after you've gotten the antibiotic out of your system.
Okay.
But that would be the approach I'd take if I were someone who was on antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So would that Seed help someone with like irritable bowel syndrome?
It may. Several of the bacteria in that product have been given to people that have irritable bowel syndromes or have different forms of colitis. And it seems to help a large percentage of them.
Huh.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it's by far the best one I have found anywhere on the market.
It's good to know.
Thank you. I had one quick question. You were talking about, what was it? Oh, yeah, the senescent cells and how the aging diseases might be the result of that. So, is psoriatic arthritis included in that?
It's an autoimmune condition.
It's autoimmune.
And an inflammatory condition.
But the problem is, why did your immune system go awry and start attacking your own body?
Sure.
And I don't know that that has any connection to senescent cells or not. All we know is what we have looked at.
Right.
And what we've looked at is mostly in animal models. Very little research done in humans as yet. We're extrapolating from what we see in the mice, the dogs, the baboons, And we're guesstimating that those things probably apply to us, but can't swear to it yet.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, ma'am. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, we hear the music, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samiri Umat. Here's that phone number to get through. It's 206-421-5757. We are live in the studio. That's 206-421-5757. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. With Leading Edge Medicine, I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samiri Umat. There we go. Go ahead and wave, because we're on video today. We're practicing, at least, on video.
Yeah, see, I have never been ready to play center field. One of my childhood traumas that this song always brings forth is, you know, when we had Little League in elementary school. And there were they had the A team and the B team.
Yeah.
A team were the kids that were really good.
Yeah.
And if you couldn't make the A team, they put you on the B team.
Uh-huh.
I was one of the few kids that kicked off the B team.
No. Wow.
One of those childhood traumas. Here I am, 77 years old, and I'm still smarting from having been rejected from the B team in the sixth grade.
Things we do to our kids. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
You know, I remember the high school coaches would tell us, your kid is not going to be the super athlete that you watch on TV. He's just a regular kid. Please focus on his career and get him educated.
There you go. In fact, my mother, I blame my mother, for my old age spots on my skin, because she used to say, Jerry, put down that book. Get out there and get some good, healthy sunshine.
Oh, boy.
And I begrudgingly put down my book and went out and got some good, healthy pre-skin cancer. Thanks,
oh, man.
Mom.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't an athlete either. I was a debate team and theater kids. So.
See, in the fifth and sixth grade.
There you go.
Should I tell a personal story here?
Sure, for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let people know Dr. Mixon a little better.
Yes.
There you go. And then, Ben, we're going to get to your phone call, so hang right on.
When I was a kid, we did not have gifted, talented programs. And I was, to some degree, a gifted child. I was talented academically, not athletically. All right. And so I was bored. Okay. In the fifth grade. So I went to my teacher in that little school at Lexington Park, Maryland, which is just outside the gates of the Patuxent River Naval Air Test Center, because it was a military town. And I went to my teacher and I said, Mrs. I forget what her name was now, but anyway, Mrs. So-and-so, I'm bored in this class. And so let me make you an offer. I said, please, give me the first semester's assignments. Give me all of them. Let me do them. And I'll turn them in. And when I'm turned all of the assignments for the semester in, let me go to the library and read and learn what I want to learn.
Okay.
And so she gave me the first semester's assignments. I knocked them out in the first month. And then I went to the library and started reading my way through our little school library. Second semester, I did the same thing, and she gave me the semester's work, and I went to the library, and I read. Sixth grade, I had pretty much read my way through our little one-room rural school library.
Okay.
And so I went to my teacher and for the sixth grade, and I said, I want to do what I did last year. Please give me the year's assignment.
Oh, gosh.
Let me knock off the year's assignment, and then let me go read. The problem is, I've already read the books in our school library.
Yeah.
So I need to go downtown. And they let me.
Oh, they did?
Wow.
They did. Wow,
Never would they do that today. Wow. But in those days, we didn't worry about kids. We were free-range kids,
uh-huh.
you know?
Yep, yep.
And so I spent about 6 weeks. I did the year's work, and I turned it all into the teacher, and I walked. The school was only about two blocks from the public library.
Okay.
So I walked the two blocks. I went to the public library, and I started reading whatever I was interested in because I'd done the sixth grade work.
Uh-huh.
And the librarians got to know me, and I was the kid who sat in the stacks between the
books, you know,
and sat, and was reading my way through the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Remember those,
really?
Yes. You
know? I have those.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hang on to those.
Yeah, and so that was my elementary school gifted talented program.
Nice.
The teachers just let me go to the library and read any damn thing I wanted to read.
Boy, those were the days.
Those were the days. Can you imagine the school letting the kid leave
Not
today?
Can you imagine the parents?
No.
Whoa.
They would never stand
never
for that.
Happen.
No.
Never, you know. But that was my program. Mm. And so, yeah, I got through my last 2 years of elementary school on a totally self-directed educational program.
Wow. No, that would not happen now. And nowadays, I'm afraid that the social media and the phones are such a distraction. Every spare time kids have, they're just connected to the social media.
Yeah, and I didn't have any of that. But the result was that I was a total athletic klutz because I left school. I spent the day reading in the library. I didn't go to recess.
Oh.
I didn't play dodgeball. I didn't play kickball. I didn't play baseball. I didn't play any of the group athletics.
Okay.
Because I was in the library reading.
Yeah, see, that's not allowed anymore. You have to participate in, in sports and in athletics.
Yeah.
And that's why you don't watch the Open.
And that's why I don't watch the
US
Olympics.
Open.
And I don't watch the US Open. And I don't watch football. And I don't watch baseball. And I don't watch basketball.
Well,
because I had zero exposure to that as a kid.
Right.
None whatsoever.
Well, you know, I learned football coming here. That was by necessity. And my husband says, I'm so glad you like football.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, you know, when Bandine came to America, I wanted to give her exposure to American culture.
Yeah.
Because, you know, coming from China, she knew nothing about America's culture. She had a pretty dim view of it, actually. And so I took her to a baseball game.
Okay.
First baseball game I had been to in decades.
Uh-huh.
But I took her to one. And by the third inning, she was so bored.
Bored, I know.
She said, nothing is happening. Let's go.
I can see that.
Yeah. And then so I took her to a football game. Now, in the football game was more exciting because we had the fans with their faces painted, you know, blue and green, and they were, you know, having these big foam fingers, flipping the finger to everybody. I don't know what the hell that's about. I thought that was kind of rude, but what the hell? They're drunk. Who knows what they're going to do?
Yeah.
And so she was actually enjoying herself watching all the drunken, rowdy fans in the stands.
Yeah.
And
Welcome
then the game
America.
Started, you know. And she watched the first little bit of it, and she turned to me and she said, Jerry, this is fascinating. She said, you have armored giants down on the field crashing into each other and knocking each other down. You've got the fans, they're faces are painted like savages, and they're all drunk and rowdy and screaming and yelling. And you know, I said, how incredibly barbaric. It's typical America.
Yeah, but it's so much fun. My happiest memories, last year the Huskies had such a good season. And our happiest memories, the first and the only time we've done it to date, we actually went down on the field after the game. Now, they're telling us, don't go to the field, but everybody's on the field and the kids are racing down to the field.
Aww.
And we looked at each other and we go,
Let's
Shall
go.
We? Let's do it. And we jumped over the rail to get to the grounds.
Sure. All right. So now you've heard the antisocial antics of Dr. Umat.
Oh, my God. It's such a vivid memory and a nice memory. Everybody yes. was such a great event, you know.
Yeah.
The Huskies celebrating their win. And, yeah, so today's the season opener for the Huskies.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you'll be there?
I will be there, yes.
Okay, we'll need a picture of you in your
out
Husky garb.
Well,
out on the field.
No, not on the field.
Are you going to have your face painted?
I don't think so today. I'm going to sit in the stands.
I want a picture to hang up on the wall in the clinic
yes.
of a drunken UMAT with her face
no.
painted.
Well, maybe not
wild
a drunken,
colors.
But yes, just no, going wild.
We earlier this year, we did go to the championship game, and I did have a picture taken by the UW staff over there because it was painted for that.
Okay. I love this. Okay. Getting to know our doctors just a bit better. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with Ben and with Glenn and their questions next. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. This is Leading Edge Medicine. I'm a Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, and we have some calls to get to. We are headed over to Seattle. We have Ben on the line. Good morning, Ben.
Hello, Ben.
Good morning. Good morning. Say, Dr. Mixon, I'm aware of the too much can be harmful statement that you've made many times, but I'm interested in high levels of testosterone, let's say 1,000 or 1,100 for a very long period of time, let's say like 10 years, mm-hmm. Versus something more in the mid-range, like 600 to 650, and the impact on heart remodeling, you know, mm-hmm. wall thickening, right. the effects on the ventricles, cardiac function, what is best for you? And if you've had sustained high blood pressure or higher than normal blood pressure, like 135 over, let's say, 90 or 85 for a long period of time, that would have had the impact on the cardiac remodeling. And if you reduce yep. your testosterone to a lower level, will these conditions essentially reverse themselves?
All right, let's go over that just a little bit. First of all, the normal healthy, athletic, 18, 20-year-old runs a total testosterone of 1,000 to 1,200. Okay, so healthy young men run quite high testosterones. Mm-hmm. Testosterone for most people is a vasodilator. It tends to lower blood pressure, not raise it. Okay, so generally when we're shooting for our men, we aren't trying to get them to an 18-year-old level because I want them to think about something besides sex in their life. So I'm shooting generally for about 800 or so in that ballpark for a total testosterone. So the typical range of a 25 to 30-year-old is what I'm shooting for most of the time. And I find that guys that stay in that range do very, very well. You know, the risk of heart attacks is actually lower with robust testosterone. The only study that ever raised that question in the other direction was a Veterans Administration study that used injectable testosterone in which you would take the shot and your levels would go supraphysiologic, too high, and then over the period of a week or two, they'd drop too low and then you'd kick them too high again.
Mm-hmm.
Those were men that already had cardiac disease, and they were taking a very abnormal method of replacing their testosterone, which is the injections. And that one did show an increased risk of cardiovascular death. But every other study out there that has looked at testosterone and cardiovascular risk seems to show that the robust levels in that 800 to 1,000 range, men do very, very well. The problem we've got is that as people age, not just their testosterone drops, but they develop hypertension. And that's a part of the fact that the arterial tree, the walls of the arteries are getting stiff. And so when the heart pumps, the in a young person, the heart pumps, you get this big bolus of blood rushing out through the arteries, and the arteries expand. They get bigger and get out of the way, so the pressure doesn't go too high. So your pulse pressure stays in a relatively modest range. The vessels expand to let that pulse of blood through, and then they contract between heartbeats to keep the pressure from dropping too low. So you've got a very dynamic system in young people's arteries. They expand and contract and expand and contract in synchrony with the heartbeat. As they age and the senescent cells are damaging the smooth muscle so that now you're getting fibrin laid down, so those arteries are getting stiff and can't expand to get out of the way when that big pulse of brush of blood comes rushing through, now you get a high systolic blood pressure. So as we're aging, our blood pressure is going up, but that's not caused by the testosterone. In fact, as we're aging, at the same time our blood pressure is going up, our testosterone levels are dropping. Okay. And so raising the testosterone again, if anything, is going to help the nitric oxide production and those vessels to expand a bit. But the testosterone doesn't undo the senescent cell damage to the smooth muscle in the arterial walls. If we want to replace that damage, we have to lower senescent cells and keep them low for long periods of time so that we've got a chance for those arteries to recover and become flexible and pliable again.
So high levels of testosterone don't result in cardiac remodeling?
Not at least within high physiologic ranges, youthful physiologic range. Now, when you're talking about bodybuilders, you've got a whole different situation, okay? A healthy young man is going to run a testosterone of 1,000 to 1,200. The bodybuilders, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers of the world, run 12 to 15,000.
Wow.
Ten times higher than a healthy young man.
Just for the purpose of building muscle.
Right. They're out to rescue every stem cell they can in their muscle mass. And grow and grow and grow with these great big rippling muscles that no normal human being has. All right. This is an totally artificial concept of masculinity. So they're trying to raise these massively overdoses of testosterone and growth hormone in combination to give them the growth factors and the stem cell production that will allow those muscles to hypertrophy to ridiculous quantities. Okay. You want to see what a really healthy athlete looks like? Okay, before go back and look at the old pictures of world-class athletes like Johnny Weissmuller. You know, who held the world records for swimming and athletics and stuff back in the 1930s and early 40s.
They were lean.
They were lean. They were fit. They were strong. They didn't have muscle piled upon muscle piled upon more muscle. They had just muscle, period. They were lean. They were fit. They didn't have high body
Jack
mass.
Oh, yeah, Jack LaLanne.
Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, the action movies, the action adventure heroes, if you will, from Hollywood, have given us a really warped view of what a fit, healthy man should look like.
Right. You know, but some of the athletes, too, like, you know, watching the Olympics, some of the swimmers, they have good physique and they have good muscle mass. Our football players, you know, especially our O-line, they are big though.
But they've got a lot of body fat.
That's body fat.
They're shooting for sumo wrestlers, just mass. They want 250, 300 pounds to crash into the guy on the other side and knock him down. Okay. They've got a lot of muscle under all that fat. But they're purposely getting fat. But that's just to make them so big and heavy that when they run into someone else, they run over them.
Ah.
Okay. Again, that's not what you and I and the average person should be.
Right.
We should be lean. We should be strong. We should be fit. We should not have that hypertrophied muscle that that Rambo and it all keep.
Does your heart, does it naturally just get thicker over time? Because I have a very healthy lifestyle, and I've had for a very long time, and I've never really paid any attention to the echocardiograms until recently, where I looked at an echocardiogram numbers from, let's say, 10 years ago to what it is today. And I noticed left ventricle is slightly bigger.
It is, and it's thicker. Okay, we've got to take a break, but we will be back and we'll talk about what's going on there.
All right. Back with more Leading Edge Medicine for you, hour number two on the way. Stay right there and stay right there, Ben. We're going to finish with your question. Peggy, we're going to talk with you next, and Glenn as well. Stay right there.